The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. To continue with the Lotus Sutra, yesterday I talked about the massive scope of the sutra, the vast numbers of beings, the Buddha lands, the immeasurable kalpas that it embraces, and the need to open our minds in faith so that we may hear the Dharma and accept it. To see that the Dharma is vast, beyond what our little brains can grasp. At the beginning of the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha is on Vulture Peak with a great many beings in attendance, his monks and nuns, lay men, lay women, huge numbers of them, plus a great many bodhisattvas and other beings. And he's just preached the sutra on innumerable meanings, which is closely linked with the Lotus Sutra. And suddenly, the earth trembles in six ways, heavenly flowers rain down, and everyone present is somehow filled with joy, and they don't know why. And the Buddha emits a brilliant light from between his eyebrows, which lights up everything in innumerable lands. Well, there's meaning in all of this. The earth trembling in six ways. This often happens in the scriptures when someone makes a great vow, or preaches the Dharma, or performs some great act. The earth trembles in six ways. And I think it can be seen as a shaking up of all that we take for granted. The things we thought were solid and to be depended upon start to shake, and we see that actually they're not so solid after all. The shaking up of our views and opinions, shaking them loose so that we can open up to something new. The heavenly flowers raining down, blessings pour down, and everyone is filled with joy, though they don't know why. There's a lot of joy in the Lotus Sutra. It often says everybody responded with joy. There's a whole chapter called The Benefits of Responding with Joy. Not just accepting the teaching and responding to it, but responding with joy, which means we accept it and see how precious it is, how precious it is, and how it benefits us. Because if we didn't respond with a kind of joy and gratitude, we wouldn't really be accepting it. Well, we don't always feel joy. Sometimes we feel wretched. We're undergoing a lot of pain or sorrow. We worry about the state of our world. Sometimes we get disheartened about our training. We feel it's kind of worthless, you know. But when we sit quietly, we let go of all that as we best can, we can know somehow inside that quiet joy that comes from knowing that we're on the right path. No matter what we feel like, we're doing the best that we could be doing with our life by putting the teaching into practice. With all our shortcomings and difficulties and sufferings and past mistakes and all that, we can change. We can put the teaching into practice. We just need to have faith in that and keep going. And this helps us, and it helps other beings too. It's not selfish to feel joy in the Dharma, to feel joy that we're doing the best that we could be doing with our life, practicing the Dharma, because it helps everybody, not just us. The other thing that happens at the beginning of the Lotus Sutra is that the Buddha emits a brilliant ray of light from between his eyebrows, which lights up innumerable Buddha lands in the east. This is just one direction, there's all the other directions too, but in the east, sends off this light to the east. I don't know why the east, but there we are. And everyone can see all the beings who live there, or their deeds and their thoughts, or their many ways of training, their sufferings, their offerings, their karma, their offerings to the Buddha, and so on. All the different ways of training and living their lives. And this light is the light of the Buddha's wisdom that shines on everything and helps us to see things as they really are. That light of wisdom, somehow it just illuminates something. Sometimes this all happens to all of us. Every now and then we think, ah, that's the way to go, or that's what that's about. Just a little moment of insight. And in this, the Buddha's shedding light on all these beings and all their lives and their histories and all that. So you can just to be able for so people can see them as they really are. And the beings present see all of this and they wonder what's going on. They've never seen anything like this before. And Maitreya asks Manjushri, who's the Bodhisattva of wisdom, what is happening? And Manjushri replies, he's seen this before. And this means that the Buddha is about to preach the great vehicle, the Lotus Sutra. Up to now, he's preached the three smaller vehicles, appropriate for those with lesser understanding, but now he's getting ready to preach the great vehicle. So this is a kind of a lead-up to the thing. The great vehicle and the three smaller vehicles. The three smaller vehicles are the teachings for the Shravakas, the voice hearers, for the Pacheka Buddhas and the Blessed Bodhisattvas. But the Shravakas are the Buddha's own disciples, represented by Shariputra in this sutra, who's the foremost in wisdom. And although he's the foremost in wisdom and greatly venerated, he's just a Shravaka for the purpose of this sutra. And yet, as we see later, he will become a Buddha. He's not stuck with just being a Shravaka. The Pacheka Buddhas are those who realize Buddhahood but don't teach. They just practice by themselves. And all of these and the lesser Bodhisattvas, the third smaller, lesser vehicle, well, up to now they've all been told that the goal of training is nirvana, becoming an arahant. But now the Buddha is preparing to tell them that the real goal is Buddhahood, Buddha wisdom, something much bigger. So the Buddha tells Shariputra that this Buddha wisdom is really hard to understand and he doesn't think people are ready for it. He talks about the skillful means of giving the teaching that people are ready for, that they can hear and practice. He says that for most people, trying to teach them the Buddha wisdom would only cause them doubt and confusion. It wouldn't help them. Even Shariputra, despite his great wisdom, is considered just a voice hearer. And he wouldn't understand. Well, Shariputra isn't settling for this. He begs him to preach the great vehicle, the Lotus Sutra. He says the people present have faith and are ready for it. And he asks three times. And finally, the Buddha agrees. When someone asks three times, he feels he has to agree. And actually, often, in our own training, we have to ask something three times before we're accepted for something. Well, in fact, the Buddha's been planning to do this all along. He wouldn't have brought it up if he hadn't meant to preach the great vehicle. But it's a skillful means in itself not to take the teaching for granted, not to underrate the great vehicle, but to see it's really precious, it's hard to understand, and it isn't preached very often. And now the Buddha has to be asked three times before he'll do it. He says, okay, I'll do it. At this point, 5,000 monks and nuns, lay men and lay women, get up from their seats and leave. Right before he preaches the Lotus Sutra, they get up and go. And the Buddha says, this is because they don't want to hear what the Buddha has to say. They have deep roots of karma, and they're overbearingly arrogant. They think they've attained what they have not attained, that they understand what they do not understand. And the Buddha doesn't try to stop them, he has to let them. He just lets them go. It's interesting that arrogance is often mentioned in this sutra as a great impediment to training. If we're arrogant, we're clinging to our own opinions and our view of ourselves, and we don't want to hear anything that challenges that. We don't want to hear that we actually don't know everything. And the Buddha can't do anything about it. He has to just let them go, knowing that people change and that one day they will hear It's not all over, but for now, they're not ready. Just let them go. When the non-believers have gone, then the Buddha can preach the Lotus Sutra. As those of us who teach know, it's very hard to teach when people are skeptical or not interested. You just can't do it. It's the openness and the willingness to learn that draws it out of us. So when someone gives a Dharma talk, the people who are listening are just as much a part of the talk as the person speaking. It's a two-way thing. You're not just talking into a vacuum. There's a reciprocation there. When the arrogant people who think they know everything, the 5,000 have left, the ones that remain are open and willing, and they have faith in the Buddha and his teaching. They want to hear the Lotus Sutra, and then he can teach it. Well, we all have our moments of unwillingness or doubt. We can all think now and then, well, I don't know, can I believe that? Is it true? This isn't a problem, as long as we don't let it stop us. Or we might think, I've read a lot about Buddhism, or I've meditated a lot, and I know a lot, and this isn't what I think. We don't want to get stuck with our views and opinions. The unbelievers left, they didn't want to hear, and there was nothing the Buddha could do. But everyone changes, we all change. Our doubts tend to dissolve with time and training. As long as we are willing to change, to let go of our old views. And then we see that there's something a lot bigger than our critical mind. But we have to allow room for that. Not to be dismayed by our doubts and criticism and all that, but not to let it stop us, not to let it get in our way, not to make it an obstruction. If we're not ready to accept something right now, we don't have to reject it. We can let it sit and let it cook, as I said yesterday. Just let it cook, not to dismiss it, not to chuck it out, not to try to swallow something it is impossible to swallow, just to let it cook. Skillful means. This is the major theme of the Lotus Sutra, and it's a theme of the whole of the first part, really, the main theme of that part. Skillful means. It explains the connection between the Buddha's earlier emphasis on nirvana as the purpose of training. That's what you read in the Pali Canon, his words, you know. Between that and the Mahayana teaching that everyone can become Buddha and all can practice the way of the Bodhisattva to help all beings. Because the Mahayana came up later than the life of the Buddha, emerged later. But this bridges the gap. And explains the matter of the three smaller vehicles and the great vehicle, the Mahayana. The Buddha says that all Buddhas have used skillful means to teach, depending on the circumstances, because all beings are different. They have different aptitudes and understandings, and they're in different situations. And as we've seen, the Buddha himself, in his lifetime, taught people in many different ways, depending on who they were. It was one of his great attributes as a teacher, this ability to communicate with all kinds of people, to explain things to them in ways that they could understand and make use of. Now the Buddha explains that when the world is in chaos, beings fall into confusion and create bad karma, and then the lesser vehicles are appropriate. But when they have faith, then the Buddha can teach the great vehicle, the Mahayana. The Bodhisattva way. Well, it seems as though the world is now in considerable chaos. Beings are terribly confused, creating horrible karma. But maybe it's always been this way. We just see it more now. It's always been the Dharma ending age. People have always said it's the first 500 years after the Buddha's life, then there's which is the true Dharma. And then there's the counterfeit Dharma, which is kind of not quite right, then they've got the Dharma ending age. People are always saying, oh, now it's the Dharma ending age. They've been saying this for at least 1,000 years. So it's still the Dharma ending age. And still there are beings with faith who can practice the great vehicle. Like us. We're trying to practice the great vehicle. We're trying to practice the Bodhisattva way. We're here. The Buddha says, if people think they're already enlightened enough and they don't need the great vehicle, then they're not enlightened at all. They're just deluding themselves. Because we all need to be willing to hear, to know that we don't know everything. Like the stories I told about the monk who'd recited the Lotus Sutra 3,000 times and didn't understand it, and then finally admitted, I don't understand this. He was willing to hear. Willing to hear Hui Neng, who had never read it, explain it to him. Great Master Hakuin, who said, I've been completely mistaken about everything after all those years of training. A wonderful example for us. The three lesser vehicles. For the voice hearers, the Pratyeka Buddhas, and the lesser Bodhisattvas, teach that the goal of training is nirvana. Finding truth for oneself, finding peace for oneself, freedom of self, from suffering for oneself. The great vehicle teaches that the real goal is Buddhahood, the wisdom of Buddha, which is far beyond nirvana. The Buddha says he himself dwells in this one great vehicle, the way of the Bodhisattva. Mahayana scriptures are often rather dismissive of the Theravada tradition, calling it a lesser vehicle. Mahayana means great vehicle. We used to call it the Hinayana, lesser vehicle, which is a bit rude. Now we call it the Theravada, the way of the elders. But the old scriptures can be kind of dismissive. The Lotus Sutra is less so than some of them. And when you actually get to know people who practice the Theravada tradition, you see that really there isn't as much difference as one might think. They teach people with wisdom and compassion, just as we try to do. They don't just sit by themselves looking for nirvana and disregard everybody else, as they've sometimes been portrayed. It's just that different methods of training suit different people, that's all. And the Lotus Sutra doesn't put down the earlier teachings. It doesn't say they're no good. After all, they're the words of the Buddha himself. Rather, the sutra bridges the gap. It explains inconsistencies or different ways of teaching, different things that the Buddha said at different times to different people. It bridges the gap. It bases the Mahayana teachings on the earlier ones. It doesn't dismiss the early ones. And this is an important point. We're not getting rid of anything here. We're just bridging the gap, going on. Now we have a parable. The parables are usually pretty unbelievable, actually, because they're parables. They're there to illustrate something, to teach us something. They're not just stories to entertain people. So they don't have to be terribly believable. And the Buddha tells the parable of the burning house, which we probably mostly know. It's the most famous of all the Lotus Sutra parables. But I'll just explain it quickly in case anyone doesn't know. But there's a rich man who has a great big house. And for some reason, this great big house just has one little door. Whole lot of rooms and just one little door. And he has a whole lot of children. And his children are all playing happily in the house. And the house is kind of falling into disrepair a bit. You know, it's not in very good shape. There's all kinds of... The electricity doesn't work too well, and, you know, things are falling down a bit, and a fire breaks out. But the children don't notice. They're just playing, you know, having a good time, playing by themselves. And the father comes home, and he sees that the house is on fire. And he yells at the children, get out of the house, get out of the house. And they take no notice. They just keep playing. Don't take any notice at all. Then he thinks, maybe I could carry them out, just pick them up and carry them out by myself. But he realizes that's not going to work. It takes too long. So what he does is he tells them that he knows that they love carts. This must be a cultural thing. These kids just love carts drawn by animals. And he says, I've got carts out here. I've got carts drawn by goats, carts drawn by sheep, carts drawn by oxen. They're out here. Come and play with them. Come and receive them. They're really nice. And the kids sit up and take notice. And they come charging out of the house to get the carts. Well, actually, there's only one big cart drawn by a white ox. Beautiful, covered with jewels, far beyond anything that they could have imagined. This is the great vehicle. The three smaller carts are the three lesser vehicles, the way of the voice hearer, the shravaka, who practices but doesn't, you know, teach, just looks for peace for himself, for themselves, or so it would seem. And then the cart of the Pratyeka Buddha, somebody who understands the truth but doesn't pass it on, doesn't train with others. And then the lesser bodhisattvas. Actually, it's not completely clear whether this lesser bodhisattva path is the same as the big cart or not. Scholars and people are not clear about that, but it doesn't really matter. The point is that these lesser paths actually get the kids out of the house. They do work. They do help us deal with our suffering, because the burning house is the world we live in, the body we have, our life of impermanence. This is the burning house. The house is burning. It does not last. We cannot stay in the house, actually. Impermanence is Buddha nature. How do we understand this? How is the burning house Buddha nature? How can it be? Where is the compassion in this? It's painful. Because if the house wasn't burning, you would have no incentive to leave it, to find something better that can take us somewhere, that can lead us to the truth. To come out of this house that is just here doesn't lead us anywhere. Just living in the world. This is what the burning house is. Just living in the world, enjoying our lives, thinking the world is completely the only reality. Just, you know, not thinking, not paying attention, not noticing. The house is burning. Impermanence is here. We're all subject to birth, old age, sickness and death. And we have to learn this. As the Buddha points out, the children have to come out of the burning house on their own. They have to make the effort. That's why he doesn't pull them out. He could pull them out. It would take time. But they have to do it for themselves. They have to make the effort. We have to learn that this world is a burning house. We have to know this and see it for ourselves. We have to feel the flames so that we want to leave this burning house. We want to relinquish the suffering of attachment. We have to make the effort for ourselves to let go of our clinging to things that don't last. We have to do this for ourselves. We have to feel those flames, to feel the suffering of pain, grief, sickness, old age, death, bereavement, loss, all that, all the suffering that comes in life. We have to see this for ourselves. And doing so, we want to come out of the house and find something that will take us somewhere. It will take us to truth. The way of the bodhisattva, the great vehicle that leads to Buddhahood. This is the Buddha's skillful means. As he says, there's no falsehood here. It's not lying to people. It's just trying to get people to pay attention. This is why he preaches the three smaller vehicles earlier on, and now we have the great vehicle. But he needed to get their attention first. A lot of the parables we'll talk about later refer to this, about the teaching of the small things first, and then when people are ready, giving them the Mahayana, the great vehicle. But early on, he's just trying to get people to see the house is burning, to get people to let go of clinging to false things. And then when they do, he can give them the great vehicle, the Mahayana, the way of the Bodhisattva. The whole of the Lotus Sutra is a manifestation of skillful means. It's full of parables and similes so that we can understand the Buddha's teaching in simple terms, different from many of the other sutras, just illustrating in simple ways that we can understand. And yet they're really profound. They're not to be overlooked. They're really profound. And this is one of the early expositions of Buddha nature, that everybody can find the path to Buddhahood. We all ride in the great vehicle. Whether we know it or not, we're all on our way. and we'll talk some about some of these parables tomorrow. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.